It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and online at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbert. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
it's determined based on what the jury thinks is reasonable compensation. And there is no book that we can open that says that whiplash renders a certain number of dollars and for pain and suffering, the jury. And a jury is made up of our peers, the people in the community. They determine what is fair compensation with the idea of making you whole.
Personal injury attorney Josh Silverman talks about auto accidents, the injuries they cause, and how to prove fault. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn about an attorney's collection letter that went too far. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 233, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and online at www.wrir.org and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. A law firm's collections letter suggesting a possible legal action may have violated the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, or FDCPA, a federal judge ruled in denying a motion to throw out a class action lawsuit against the law firm. The decision by U.S. District Judge Robert Payne of Richmond marks another blow against Dunning letters that crossed the line with threats of adverse consequences, said Dale Pittman of Petersburg, the lawyer for the debtor who received the letter. The opinion is extremely significant because it is not unusual for foreclosure mill law firms in Virginia to send letters couched in threatening terms as if a lawsuit were about to be filed. A Virginia foreclosure is a non-judicial procedure, and courts have held that suggestions of possible legal actions violate the FDCPA when foreclosure is the only action contemplated. The Bethesda, Maryland firm of Rosenberg & Associates sent a collections letter to an Henrico County homeowner in 2012, saying he had defaulted on his mortgage and owed $235,000. The letter said the bank had referred the loan to this office for legal action based on the default. If the homeowner failed to dispute the debt within 30 days, the amount recited herein will be assumed as valid, the letter said. The homeowner filed a class action lawsuit saying the letter violated the FDCPA because the bank did not refer the loan to Rosenberg to file a lawsuit, and Rosenberg did not intend to file a lawsuit. The letter also failed to say who would be assuming the debt as valid. The collection attorney argued that foreclosure is a legal action, so the letter's language was not deceptive. But the judge said the test is the capacity of the statement to mislead an unsophisticated consumer. The law firm knew that the matter had been referred to it for the purpose of instituting foreclosure proceedings. It could have said precisely that, the judge ruled. It instead elected to use a phrase that the least sophisticated consumer could understand to mean that the law firm might sue on the debt. It is unlikely that a law firm that specializes in collection and foreclosure work made its decision inadvertently, the judge concluded. As for the 30-day notice, the law firm argued that the letter effectively conveyed that only the debt collector would assume the debt to be valid. The judge was not persuaded because the law requires that such 30-day notices specify that it is the debt collector as opposed to a court that will deem the debt valid after a month. The case, Faria Santos v. Rosenberg & Associates, LLC, has been set for a settlement conference May 13. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the Silverman Law Office in the west end of Richmond. We're talking with Josh Silverman today, and we're going to be talking about motor vehicle accidents. Welcome back to the show, Josh.
Well, thank you for having me back, Marty.
Well, I know a major part of your practice is automobile accidents. And the first question I want to ask is, if someone is involved in an automobile accident, what is the first thing that they should do?
Well, the first thing they should do is think about safety and put the legal issues aside in the short term. And so that's calling the police, rendering aid to other people. And once you know everybody is safe, then you need to start thinking about your legal rights. And that starts with, first, taking down the names of all the witnesses. Oftentimes the police will not take down names of witnesses who stop at an accident scene. Secondly, nowadays everybody has a cell phone that's going to be able to take pictures. If you can, take pictures of the vehicles before any of the vehicles are moved. Your vehicle, the other vehicle, and my advice is to go 360 degrees all the way around the vehicle. And doing that at the accident scene can save you if there's a dispute in the future regarding what happens in the collision. So those would be my first considerations.
Now, part of the information, I would imagine, is the name of the insurance companies for, I guess, both sides. So my question then is, should someone then talk with the insurance company?
You need to contact your own insurance company. That is definitely the starting point. You need to contact your own insurance company, and my advice is to go ahead and deal with the property damage with your own insurance company. You do not need to give a recorded statement to the other insurance company. There is no requirement that you do that, and my advice to people is not to do that because these recorded statements have a way of getting twisted and turned against them. So I would notify your own insurance company about the collision. Provide all the information they need so they can conduct their investigation and you can get your property damage taken care of promptly. But I would not give a recorded statement to the other insurance company. And the other insurance company means the insurance company for the other driver.
So your advice is to have your own insurance company take care of your property damage. What happens if the other driver is at fault? How does your insurance company deal with that?
Well, what they're going to do is what's called subrogation. So they will either coordinate it with the other insurance company to pay the property damage claim, or they will pay it, and then they will seek reimbursement from the other insurance company. So you end up largely at the same place.
So what are the common injuries that occur in an automobile accident? We're talking about personal injuries here, not just property damages.
Sure. Well, it's a whole range. Obviously, a lot of people die in automobile accidents, and that's even with perfectly working airbags and seat belts. If somebody's in a vehicle accident, particularly if it involves a trucker or a drunk driver, unfortunately, there are tens of thousands of deaths on the road each year, and that hasn't changed despite all of these technologies. And then the injuries range all the way down to minor muscle strains, sometimes whiplash. Now, whiplash can be misunderstood. You can be in an accident and have a whiplash injury and be perfectly fine in a couple days. That was my experience in an auto accident a few years ago. But a certain percentage of people will never recover from a whiplash injury because it is tears of the muscles and ligaments, and it can have a lifetime impact on them. So those are the extremes. In between, you have broken bones. You have traumatic brain injury, which is one of these invisible injuries because usually the bruising and the scars all go away, but the damage to the brain remains, and that can be impacting people for the rest of their lives.
So how did these medical bills get paid for the various types of medical treatment that is necessary for these injuries?
Great question. First thing is, if you have health insurance, and hopefully you do, you want to process it through your health insurance, even though somebody else may be at fault and should be held ultimately responsible for your medical bills. Step one is, when you go to the hospital or the doctor, you give them your health insurance card, just like you were there if you had the flu. You don't bring up that there's an automobile insurance carrier involved. And then after that, you can actually get reimbursement, even if your health insurance company paid, from your own automobile carrier under what's called the medical payments coverage of your auto policy. That's an optional coverage in Virginia. Not everybody has it. If you don't have it, I'd encourage you to add it. It's a cheap coverage. And even subsequent to that, the other driver, if you can prove that they're at fault, they also have to reimburse you for the medical bills. And under Virginia law, you can still seek those damages from the other driver and their insurance company, even if the bills were already paid by your health insurance or your automobile policy under the medical payments coverage.
So is that a bit like subrogation of a property damage claim? In other words, your insurance company pays and then they go after the person who's at fault?
Actually, Virginia has an anti-subrogation statute. So in many cases, even after your insurance company pays, they cannot go after the other person who is at fault. You can actually collect twice on your medical bills. So let's say you have a $1,000 bill at the doctor's office. You can submit that to your health insurance company, and they should pay the bill minus any deductible or copay. You can then submit it to your automobile carrier and collect the medical payments benefits, and that's a check that can go directly to you that you can spend as you choose. And again, you can actually go against the other driver and their insurance company and collect on the medical bills. And in many cases, there's no obligation to repay your health insurance company, and your health insurance company cannot subrogate by seeking reimbursement from the other driver. It all depends on how that insurance policy is written.
I see. So what are some of the other elements of damage or recovery? Things like, for example, lost wages.
Well, lost wages can be recovered. And in Virginia, you can recover for your lost wages even if you were using your sick leave, or if you used your vacation time, or if your employer just happens to be very generous and paid you anyway. Under Virginia law, even if you were paid, if you missed the time from work, the other driver owes you for the value of that missed time from work. And that's by statute in Virginia and by case law.
And what are some of the other elements of monetary recovery, damages in a motor vehicle accident case? We always hear the phrase pain and suffering. What's that? How do you measure that?
Well, pain and suffering is a term that, you know, I prefer to think about it as a human factor. These are things that you can't write on a chalkboard X dollars. It's determined based on what the jury thinks is reasonable compensation. And there is no book that we can open that says that whiplash renders a certain number of dollars and for pain and suffering. The jury, and a jury is made up of our peers, the people in the community, they determine what is fair compensation with the idea of making you whole. Now, how that is calculated, that's really why one needs a lawyer, because a lawyer's job is to articulate to the jury why somebody should be compensated and to give the jury a sense that money is the only avenue left to obtain justice for an injured person for their pain and suffering.
Now, I know you cannot ask a jury to, say, estimate how much they would be paid per day or per week or per month if they had these type of injuries. I know that limit exists. But what are the types of things that a lawyer can argue to a jury to get a jury to come up with a figure for pain and suffering?
You're exactly right. In Virginia, you can't argue a per day or per hour. However, some of the things you can do is try and give the jurors realistic examples. For example, when you are in pain, you pay money for Tylenol, and you pay money for drugs. And you can kind of try to give a jury a sense of, we expend money to try and get pain to go away, to get them to start thinking in terms of compensation. Now, you're right, it is not easy, and you can't sit there and say, how much should he be paid per hour? But you can bring out to the jury things like, if the injured person is permanently injured, their life expectancy. And we've got a statute that basically is a life expectancy table. So if you're 40 years old, we can look up and explain to the jury, for every day of this person's life, they are going to be experiencing pain. And that's talking about the next 40 years or whatever the life expectancy table would state.
And are you also allowed to talk about quality of life, how one's quality of life has been diminished because of the pain and suffering?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can talk about things that the person enjoyed doing before the accident, and that's an important area to cover. I always talk to my clients about, what would you do when you weren't at work? Were you gardening? Were you playing golf? Were you going for long walks with your wife? Are you able to do those things anymore? And sometimes the answer is, no, I can't do it. Other times is, I do it, but I pay a price for it, because I do it and I hurt. And I hurt afterwards. And it's a good thing to be talking to a juror about, what would it be like for them if they couldn't enjoy their hobbies anymore? Or they couldn't do them at all anymore.
And what about punitive damages? Are those available in motor vehicle accident cases in Virginia?
Most cases, they're not available. Punitive damages are reserved for the most egregious conduct. Now, in society, we think drunk driving is pretty egregious. And so there's a statute that says if somebody causes an accident while drunk and their blood alcohol level was equal to or greater than 0.15, the legal limit is 0.08, but if it's at 0.15, then one can obtain punitive damages. And in Virginia, you can obtain punitive damages up to $350,000. And unlike other states, in Virginia, that can be compensated through insurance. So some states take the position that it's against public policy to provide insurance for punitive damages. Virginia's taken the exact opposite approach, that it's our public policy to fully compensate people. So up to $350,000 can be recovered in punitive damages, and we're usually talking about drunk driving accidents.
So in a drunk driving accident where punitive damages are available up to that $350,000, what if there is a lower limit on the insurance policy of the driver at fault? Is the compensation limited to that lower limit, or does the insurance company have to pay up to $350,000 regardless of the policy limit?
Now, the insurance company only has to pay up to their policy limits. And most policies are less than $350,000, unfortunately. So what happens in that situation is the insurance company pays its policy limits. Whatever the difference is, the drunk driver is responsible for, and one can try and collect that money from the drunk driver. And that can, and you'll have a judgment against that drunk driver. So that can be, if the drunk driver is employed, one can garnish their income. If they have assets, that can be levied against. There's another option, and that is your own insurance policy. If you have insurance that exceeds the other driver's coverage, your insurance policy will pick up the difference. So if the other driver has $100,000 in coverage and you have $500,000 in coverage, the other driver's policy will pay $100,000. Your policy will pick up the difference and pay $250,000 to get you to that $350,000 recovery.
So that sounds like an excellent reason for everybody to try to have a minimum of $350,000 in coverage.
I'd encourage people to have at least that much, if not more. And if you talk to your insurance agent, you will be really surprised at how cheap it is to raise your policies.
Now, we've been talking about recovery, we've been talking about damages, but let's also go back to the question of liability. How do you determine fault in a motor vehicle accident case if both drivers believe the other is at fault?
Wow. That's often the case. Everybody thinks they're a great driver and the other driver is at fault. Sometimes it's real clear if one driver rear-ends another driver. Other times you have situations where both it's an intersection and everybody says they had a green light. So some of the things we do is first we look for witnesses. So an independent witness can go a long way in terms of proving who was at fault for the accident. Secondly, what we can do is we can actually look at the sequence of the traffic lights. So you can go to the traffic engineering department and find out the sequence to it. So maybe somebody didn't see what color the light was, but they do remember which lane last had a green light. And the traffic engineering department may be able to tell you who had the next green light. Now then you go to looking at the credibility of the two parties. And things we look for is, did one of the drivers have a criminal record? If you have a felony conviction or a conviction for a misdemeanor involving lying, stealing, or cheating, what lawyers call moral turpitude, that can be used against you to try and persuade the jury that that person isn't believable. Now, sometimes at the end of the day, we're down to one person's word against another person's word, and then it comes down to who's more persuasive in court, who's more believable.
And what about police reports? Are they sometimes useful in determining fault? Obviously, the police weren't there, but they arrived on the scene shortly thereafter. How useful are those reports?
Those reports are very useful to doing an investigation. They are not admissible in court. So if the police officer drew an opinion as to who was at fault, that police officer's opinion is not admissible in court. Now, what is admissible, though, is if the police officer charges one of the parties to the accident with a traffic offense, and that party enters a plea of guilty, their plea of guilty can be used in a civil case for damages to show that they have admitted fault in the past. And that can be very persuasive in showing a jury who was responsible for the accident.
And what about accident reconstruction? We always see that on the TV lawyers. Is that something that's only TV lawyering, or is that something that's done in real lawyering as well?
It is done in real lawyering. However, it's not like on TV. Under Virginia law, there are limits on how you can use accident reconstructionists. So you can't have them come to court and say who was at fault for the accident and exactly how the accident occurred, but they can be very effective at doing things like measuring skid marks and scientifically calculating how fast somebody was going to have generated that length of a skid mark. They can be very effective at interpreting the black boxes on our cars. Most cars nowadays, through the airbag system or the engine control module, collect data from an accident. And one can download that information and obtain very interesting information. Now, it varies from car to car what type of information can be recovered. And it's certainly the age of the car is a big factor. A car that you bought last year is going to tell you a whole lot more than the 15-year-old car that's you drive just on the weekends. Also, big rigs contain a ton of information about what happens immediately before an accident.
And finally, is there anything else that a victim of a motor vehicle accident should know?
The important thing to know is whatever your training is, if you're not trained in the law, you really should consult with a lawyer to get proper legal advice. The insurance companies have lawyers that work for them. Most of these agents are very nice and they'll be very pleasant with you on the telephone. Their business objective is to pay you as little as possible. That's how they make money. And so I always advise people, contact a lawyer. There are plenty of very good lawyers in Richmond that would be more than happy to help you. And even though you will be paying a legal fee, my experience is you will collect more money at the end of the day. You will go through less hassle if you have a lawyer assisting you.
Well, thank you very much. We have been speaking with Josh Silverman at the Silverman Law Firm in the West End of Richmond, talking about motor vehicle accidents, the type of injuries people suffer, the type of compensation they can obtain, and how to prove fault, and that you should go to a lawyer. Thank you so much, Josh.
It has been a pleasure. Thank you, Marty.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. If someone is receiving any form of needs-based benefits or disability benefits from the Social Security Administration, they may require a special needs trust. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when estate planning attorney Mary Ellis talks about special needs trusts at the 2013 Annual Statewide Legal Aid Conference. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.